From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, BART's two main unions are officially on strike as talks broke off last night between BART management and union representatives. We'll discuss the strike this morning and keep you up to date on its status and where the negotiations stand, as well as what alternatives are available for commuters. You may want to call, email, or tweet us and let us know how the strike is affecting you this Monday morning. Forum is next. Join us after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Bay Area commuters are scrambling to cope with the first day of a strike by BART workers. Talks broke off last night between BART management and union representatives. And this hour, we want to discuss the strike, the prospects for an agreement, and what alternatives are available for commuters. And joining us in the studio is Dan Brecke, who is news editor for KQED Public Radio. Dan, good morning.
Good morning.
Update us. Where are we at this point?
Well, I think this morning's commute looks like everybody thought it would be in a BART-less world. Things are a mess where we expected them to be. The big choke point is the Bay Bridge and the highways leading there. We're almost solid coming down Interstate 80 from the north and east and on up from Oakland and in from Contra Costa County. At the same time, the provisions that various agencies made to get extra people going seem to be working. We're hearing that there are big crowds on the ferries, but nobody's complaining, except we heard from one early morning commuter that the new riders are talking too much. Other than that, things seem to be pretty much as expected. Build in more time for your trip today.
Well, that's heartening to hear, but at the same time, do we have a logjam here between the union and BART management? Do we have a cul-de-sac, so to speak?
It's a good, very good question, and neither of them have come out this morning to talk. They both had the position last night that they were willing to continue. Obviously, that stopped fairly early in the evening. Pressure from Governor Brown, or apparent pressure from Governor Brown, didn't move things to where people might have expected. So we'll just have to wait and see what happens today.
Well, BART saying the union left early, left the table, the negotiating table early, and the union, of course, is firing back saying it wasn't real. It was just a surface kind of raise. It wasn't any real raise at all. And as I said, we're kind of locked horns here, aren't we?
I'd like to see the spreadsheets that they're both looking at to see what kind of raises were actually involved. But yeah, they seem to be to have locked horns, and we'll see if we're looking at a one-day strike or something that lasts like 6 days, or let's not even contemplate the possibility that it could go longer.
Advice to commuters at this point?
Like I said, plan for more time on your trips, and I think people are looking ahead to the PM commute today. The difference in that trip is that more people are leaving at the same time to hit the highway or the transit agencies, the buses and the ferries. So we'll see how well things happen this evening.
Dan Brecke again is news editor for KQED Public Radio, and thank you for joining us.
Yeah, you're welcome.
We're also joined by Randy Rentschler here in studio, who directs legislation and public affairs for the Metropolitan Transportation Commission. MTC is the transportation planning, coordinating, and financing agency for the nine counties, San Francisco Bay Area. And this, of course, is affecting the whole Bay Area. Randy, as you see things, I mean, at this point, they're getting snarled, but we were kind of heartened by what Dan described for us. But we may have more problems. I mean, there's talk about a strike by ATC Transit. There's talk about the possibility of even more strikes going on. It seems like it's contagious at this point.
Well, you know, on the transportation side, I think the big concern on the East Bay was what AC Transit was planning to do. The buses on the East Bay are really important, particularly when BART's not available. You know, the ferries have done really well today for the folks who are able to have access to them. You know, from a numbers point of view, they don't carry anywhere near the size that BART does. But I think for us on the transportation side, we're really trying to focus on making sure people know what their alternatives are, so they can deal with this work stoppage. And on the first day, I think we're still trying to understand all of the details that are going on out there.
But ACT Transit is running more buses, and BART is running a few buses too, aren't they?
Yeah, BART is running buses. The AC buses that I saw this morning, particularly the ones going over the Bay Bridge, were standing room only. I think a lot of those people are used to having a seat, and I think they had a lot of friends with them today. What I was surprised with is that the carpool, particularly the casual carpool, locations that I went by this morning weren't as crowded as I expected, and there was a lot of single occupancy drivers on the Bay Bridge. So there's a lot of empty seats on the Bay Bridge. There just happen to be in cars, not buses. We'd like to see people be able to go to a BART station or go to a casual carpool location and pick up some of their neighbors and try to relieve some of the pressure out there.
I mentioned the possibility of AC Transit going on strike. In fact, they're supposed to be meeting today, and Oakland City workers possibly going on strike. I mean, all this could just exacerbate and become pretty bad. It's potential for chaos.
Well, you know, East Bay Regional Parks has also talked about their workers participating in this as well. So it does seem to be that it's a larger narrative than transportation or just BART. It seems to be there is this pent-up frustration across the board with respect to a lot of the municipal workers.
What about the supposed tentative agreement on 11 items? That's what BART management said.
Well, I think on the big items, they're still, it appears, pretty far away. And those big items are compensation-related, health care, pension, contributions, and so forth.
Actually, what I'd like to do at this point, we have Randy Rentschler in here with us, and we're going to go to some other folks who are involved in this strike in one way or the other. But you are involved, many of you, and we'd like to hear from you. In fact, if you're experiencing difficulties commuting this morning, or if you've decided to telecommute, and that was the advice that was certainly given to many people having difficulties this morning, are you able to do that? I'm just interested in hearing from listeners in terms of what kind of adversity and obstacles they're facing this morning and what your feelings are as well. I mean, there's a lot of sentiment, both pro and con, where the union is concerned. We'll hear from the union in a moment. And so you can certainly register your thoughts or feelings with us, and we welcome your calls. Our toll-free number is available right now. It's 866-733-6786 if you'd like to join us. And again, we do welcome your phone calls, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. A number of ways, of course, to get in touch with us, and you can also go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. What's your gut tell you about getting back to the bargaining table, Randy?
Well, again, I think that both sides are pretty far away from each other. Often when you see things going to the last hour, which they have in the past, they were really arguing over just a few items. But right now it seems to be compensation related. I guess I would add that, you know, over time, public agencies have sought to protect their workers from increasing healthcare costs that have really snarled our economy for decades. And I think that both sides are really stuck in this kind of national issue of rising healthcare costs, pensions that are difficult, and you can see that those are the two sticking points in this particular item, and whether or not these two sides can find a middle ground on that subject, I think, is still an open question. That is really, I think, the crux of the issue for both sides.
Well, there's another open question. That is, if this continues to go on, if the strike lasts or endures, what's the effect and the impact on this Bay Area infrastructure? I mean, it's got to be mammoth.
Well, it really is. You know, the Bay Area was built to a certain extent around BART being there. The constraints of our transportation system, not just we don't have the kind of freeways we need to move people without BART, but we have tunnels and bridges and so forth, and that only functions when we have a successful BART system. So the Bay Area is reliant on BART, and there's really no substitute for BART. When places have other transportation options such as ferries or Caltrain or buses, BART is still the predominant carrier for people who go a long distance, with the city of San Francisco and Muni being a bit of an exception to that general rule.
And as I said, if AC Transit goes on strike, this could be what they call a perfect storm.
Well, for folks who live on the East Bay particularly, yes.
And yet, Pete Castelli, the union representative, we're going to talk to somebody from the union here in a moment, has been saying that we've got to, the union has to combat to get back the middle class. You know, he talks about Wall Street, and he talks about the fact that, well, they had a successful strike with the port, and now strikes are going to go across the Bay and throughout the Bay Area, and we're going to essentially get back what we lost during the downturn because money's coming back in.
Well, you know, on the public side, you're not seeing that kind of money coming back in. If you look at the revenue sources the public has, the tax base, sales tax, and so forth, you're not seeing it decline like it did, but you're not seeing a significant recovery like what did occur during the dot-bomb economy, where sales tax revenues for public agencies, which is really what supports public transit in the Bay Area, that has not really recovered in that sense. So the economy, while stable in the Bay Area, is not seeing that big growth that put money into the coffers of these public entities, these agencies that was available to you know, cover these rising health care costs and pension costs and other things.
Again, Randy Rentschler here with us in studio, directs legislation and public affairs for the Metropolitan Transportation Commission. Leisha Trost is spokeswoman for BART, and she's joining us by phone this morning. And Leisha Trost, good to have you with us.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. Leisha Trost, we have you?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh,
good morning.
I'm sorry. Good morning. Glad to have you with us. Let's go right to, cut to the chase here, if I can. I'm sure there are many people, although things are not as snarled or as chaotic as some were predicting, this strike could last. And from your perspective, what do you tell all those angry would-be riders out there?
Well, we hate to drag the public into BART's labor mess, and we really apologize for the inconvenience it's causing. There is a lot at stake, and really it's about the future of BART. It's the future BART service, being able to show up and jump on a train and know it's going to be there when it says it's going to be there. And so we're really trying to figure out a balance of investing in our employees and investing in our system.
And each side is doing the usual kind of dance, if you will, of blaming the other side. In fact, I know BART management and you and others who represent BART management or are speaking for BART say that labor left the table early, and yet they're saying that there isn't a real deal that's even being offered here. It's only a raise, for example, on the surface.
Well, the good news is we did reach 11 tentative agreements, like you mentioned earlier, and that's always a positive sign. The talks yesterday were very respectful, and it was a very cordial conversation. We were hoping to use that momentum from the agreements we did reach to kind of move the talks further, but it just didn't happen. We had offered, we doubled our wage increase proposal. We were hoping to get something back from them. They countered with, well, we want more. We want a substantial change, and if you can't give us a substantial change, then we're leaving for the evening to go back to our union halls. And we felt that since we had just doubled our wage increase offer, it's fair for them to come back to us with something a little bit more reasonable, and let's try to meet somewhere in the middle. It just didn't happen last night. We're hoping the strike allows our employees to let off some steam. Maybe that'll help get us back to the table and come up with a reasonable compromise. No one wants to see this go any further than it has to.
Let me bring Josie Mooney onto this. She's chief negotiator for SEIU 1021. Josie Mooney, good morning.
Good morning.
Glad to have you aboard here. Well, what we're hearing certainly from Leisha Trost is it was all presented in good faith, and you left the bargaining table.
Well, that's completely inaccurate. I just have to say that we did not leave the bargaining table. On Friday and Saturday, we waited 36 hours for a response from BART management for 14 proposals that we put across the table. And then yesterday at the mediator's request, we showed up to negotiate, and at 8 o'clock, actually 8:20, we were advised that BART management had nothing further to give us and that there would be nothing further coming. So we went back, it's true that we went back to the union hall and waited till midnight, hoping against hope that BART management would send us over a different offer. But I also want to address what Leisha said about the offer itself. If I give you a quarter in paragraph one, and then I take it away in paragraph two, that still amounts to zero. So while BART management has put a 5% raise on page one, theoretically page one, they've taken it away on page four. And then the other 3% is contingent upon six factors occurring each and every year, which they acknowledged across the table would not be possible. So as far as the union is concerned, there are two issues at stake here. One is a fair economic package for the workers and their families, and the other is for BART management to address the significant and serious safety concerns that we have repeatedly raised at the table. So far, they've been completely non-responsive, except to say, oh, we'll put together a committee. We want real safety language that will protect the workers and protect the riding public.
Well, you're talking almost two different languages here. You're talking about public safety. They're talking about overtime abuse. And frankly, I'm just wondering about the offer that they did make you, because it was 1% per year, but from your perspective, it came with contingencies, did it not?
Yes, it did.
Could you talk about that?
Well, the offer was 2% in the first year and 1% thereafter, but then they take it away by asking, so that they offered us 5%, and then they require in their offer that we pick up 5% of the pension. So that puts us back at zero. And I want to remind you that these workers took a wage freeze for each of the last 4 years and gave back $100 million worth of compromises in the last 4 years, concessions after concessions. BART management refuses to acknowledge that the system is in great shape, that ridership is up, and that the people who keep BART running each and every day are the workers themselves. And after 4 years of no increase, they deserve to share in the millions of dollars of surplus that BART has. Our proposal is very reasonable. We, of course, are willing to come back to the table. But when there's an indication that BART's going to deal with our safety proposals and put a fair economic package on the table.
And what do you say, though, to those riders and those commuters who really feel some anger at the union, feel that the union, particularly when you read Pete Castelli saying, you know, we're going to be combative and we're not going to give an inch here and that kind of rhetoric, we're going to start strikes all over the Bay Area.
Well, I didn't hear Pete's quote, but I am deeply respectful of his leadership in the union, and I do think that what he says about ordinary working people being angry at the failure of management to recognize that they, in fact, keep these systems running is a very fair point of view. To the riders themselves, of course, the union is deeply regretful that this has resulted in a strike. But honestly, we felt like BART management was pushing us out the door, that they have done surface bargaining ever since we got to the table. We got to the table 6 weeks. I've bargained this contract three other occasions. And as you know, I've been bargaining and negotiating in the Bay Area for 25 years. This is the worst set of negotiations I've ever experienced in my whole life, because BART management has done nothing but surface negotiations. And as a consequence, the union has filed a lawsuit against them for unfair labor practices in their negotiations. And we're out on strike for that reason. But we are deeply, deeply regretful that it's come to this, and we would like to be back at the table with a fair offer, which, and honestly, as I said to the media last night, this union will consider any fair offer and go back to the table once BART indicates that they're willing to negotiate with some serious effort to come to a resolution.
Well, let me go back to Alicia Trost, because I'm sure that this doesn't square Alicia Trost with the way you see things, and I want to get your response. But there's also a question, like Randy Rensselaer says, maybe there isn't all this money, and we're hearing from Josie Mooney that there's a lot of surplus money. I know the realty market has rebounded. Prop 30 has brought in more money. And as I said, Mr. Castelli has said how important it is to get workers back in the middle class. Given all that, just what kind of surplus money and revenue does BART really have here?
Well, we don't have a surplus. We have a tremendous unfunded capital need. We're not corporate America squirreling away money or even trying to get a rainy day fund. This is money that is absolutely essential to the future of BART. We want to buy 1,000 new train cars and a new train control system, and the federal government is not raining down money on us. Our 10-year financial forecast, we're already assuming that the federal government and our other agencies are going to provide 75% of the funding. So we're just trying to come up with the 25% of the funding, and that's really at stake. In terms of the wage proposal, the offer right now is raises up to 8%. Josie had mentioned how there are some of that is conditional. It's on some economic parameters and ridership numbers. And every BART employee today, as of today, is getting a 1% raise. And that raise was conditional. And guess what? We met it. So it is possible. We did it this year. Everyone's getting a 1% at BART raise today. There was economic parameters set, and we met them. We're also open to negotiating the parameters within those, that 3% that is conditional. But that's what prudent people that are trying to plan their future do, as you said. Well, if ridership starts to plummet for all of a sudden, or if the economy tanks, we need to be careful with our money. This is the taxpayer money. We have to be very reasonable and fair and responsible. But also, our workforce is tremendous. They are working so hard. They are what makes us have on-time reliability, absolutely. And so we want to invest in them. We're just trying to get somewhere in the middle. Let's get back to the table. Let's not let the strike go on any longer. Let's just come up with a fair contract.
Josie Mooney, final remark from you.
Well, when we were sitting across the table the other day, and I queried the BART negotiator, who, by the way, BART has spent $1 million on outside consultants to bargain this contract against the workers. When I asked him So you're representing to the union that at the end of 4 years, every worker will be in the black. He said yes. And I said, by how much? What does it mean to be in the black? And he said, by $1. So, in fact, across the table, what they have admitted is that their proposal contemplates that these workers will be $1 ahead in 4 years from now, where they are today, having had no increase in the last 4 years. I agree with Lisa that we should get back to the table and that BART management needs to recognize, unlike what Lisa said, that they have a projected $125 million surplus for each of the next 10 years. And some of that surplus should be devoted to restoring the wages and the safety of the workers who keep BART running every day.
Okay. On that note, let me thank you, Josie Mooney, Chief Negotiator for SEIU 1021, Alicia Truss, spokeswoman for BART. And we're going to bring our listeners into this and get your responses to the strike, which began today on the 1st of July. And we begin with a caller from Daly City, Naima. Good morning.
Hey, it's actually Naima. Hi,
Naima, I'm sorry. Good morning.
So I just wanted to call and kind of share my experience this morning with the BART strike. I drive into San Francisco from Daly City to work every morning, and I was concerned because I knew there might be a BART strike. And when I heard that it happened, I thought, well, there might be a lot of traffic. But I checked traffic before I left, and everything looked really good. So I get on the freeway, and the freeways are actually really clear, at least on 280. And I thought, this is excellent. This is, like, better than a regular day because everyone, I guess, was staying home or whatever. But once I got downtown, my usual parking lot was full, and then every other parking lot I tried to go to was full. So it was a little bit misleading. When the freeways are clear, it doesn't mean that you're not going to be affected.
That's a good point. And Randy Richard, let me go to you on this because, in fact, I'm looking at a number of, like Bob writes, for example, no sympathy here for the strikers. And we'll get to some of those kind of sentiments. But another listener tweets us and says, looks like a great day to stay home from work or take a vacation day. Where will people be able to park all those cars once they get into San Francisco? There already is a parking crunch.
Well, you know, there really is. And it's not just downtown San Francisco, but if you ride Caltrain, you're probably accustomed to having your parking spot, and it may not have been there for you this morning. There's no doubt a lot of people got up really early this morning. And I do think that this stoppage, if it continues over time, people can make short-term adjustments. We are in a holiday week. There is some telecommuting going on for sure. There's no doubt. How this plays out over a longer period of time, I still think is in question. And I think the caller's response that it seemed good on the freeways when she was there until she got to her end destination is not just true for her, but for a lot of people as well.
In fact, here's a listener who tweets, only took the bus 45 minutes to get to the bridge. Now the hard part, getting over.
So. Well, you know, once you get past the metering lights, the bridge is going pretty well. But as a lot of people experience, getting to that bridge in our incomplete carpool system in the Bay Area has a lot of carpoolers and buses waiting until you can get on it.
Let me bring another caller in. And Michelle, that's you. Good morning.
Good morning. I just want to say that I really think that the BART employees have unrealistic expectations as far as the bargaining goes. Like, I'm a government employee. I haven't had a raise. I have to contribute to my own health care. And I just think what they're asking for is unrealistic.
Yeah, thank you. And again, I'm asking listeners to register your feelings one way or another for either those on strike or those in management. Bob writes, no sympathy here for strikers. As a state worker, I haven't had a raise in many years. On the contrary, I've lost tens of thousands of dollars in unpaid furloughs. You may want to join the program. Again, you can do so by reaching us at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786, or emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or going right to our website, kqed.org/forum. Click on the segment. And you can also, of course, tweet us. Our Twitter handle's @KQED Forum. We'll continue. Randy Rencher will stay with us, Director of Legislation and Public Affairs for the MTC, the Metropolitan Transportation Commission. You are listening to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny, and Bay Area commuters are scrambling to cope with this first day of a strike by Bay Area rapid transit workers. And talks broke off, as you may know, last night between BART management and union representatives. And we're discussing the strike, the prospects for an agreement, and what alternatives are available for commuters. And you may want to join us. In fact, let us know how your commute is going. You can do that by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or going right to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. And you can also, of course, go to our Facebook page. Eric writes, may I have a show of hands among forum listeners? How many of you have experienced stagnating take-home pay over the past 5 years due to salary freezes, increased health care and or pension contributions or layoffs? Does the SEIU and the ATU really believe that only their members have suffered during this recession? Whether or not they are willing to admit it, these unions have declared war on the 99%, including people like me who depend on BART to get to work. There's, again, some pretty strong sentiments there. And Randy Rentschler, we're just talking off air about the fact that a lot of this kind of hornlock logjam that we're talking about here has a bigger picture, not only with public employees unions, but with the sense of management feeling, you know, we're at the breaking point here. We're paying health care. That's got to be factored in. That's got to be seen in the equation. We're paying toward pensions. We're paying pensions we agreed to pay. And this can't be sustained. And therefore, you're asking for a raise. You can't have it, or you can only have a very small raise at best. Yeah.
Well, you know, across the entire spectrum of the public sector, you're seeing these large forces at play, which are playing out today in people's miserable commute. But these larger forces are healthcare costs, which are crushing public agencies across California. There's been bankruptcies, in fact, because promises were made, agreements were made on a system that existed probably 10 or 20 years ago, and it doesn't exist today. The costs are just too high. The same is true with pensions. Pensions were increased significantly some 20 years ago. A lot of those people didn't pay into it, but they got it. They've since probably moved away to a lower cost system. We have these large structural issues that are manifesting itself today on both sides. And so it is true that many public employees have not seen raises for a long time. On the other hand, the public agencies themselves have seen double-digit increases on the requirements that they need for health care and pensions. And what you're seeing are these larger forces at play in a very difficult situation on everyone's commute.
Again, Randy Rentschler is Director of Legislation and Public Affairs for the Metropolitan Transportation Commission. A few of your tweets and Facebook remarks. Chris tweets, I stand with the BART workers and I stand against the people who say it's hard for me too. Exactly, we are all in this. Adriana tweets, I had an interview today that had to be rescheduled because the interviewer is working from home, said it would take him 4 hours to get into San Francisco. And Jan writes on Facebook, we need greater penalties on the BART management and unions for this. How can some handful of BART management and 2,400 union members be allowed to blackmail the millions of people affected in the Bay Area? If there were greater penalties involved, both parties would come together sooner. Well, let me bring Michael Cabanatuan into this discussion. He, of course, is transportation writer for the San Francisco Chronicle and joins us by phone. Michael, good to have you. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Just a simple question to begin with, because you've been following this from the beginning. Why didn't Governor Brown step in here, do you think?
Well, Governor Brown, I believe that Governor Brown did step in. He had his Secretary of Labor contact the BART unions and basically tell them, look, we really want you to go back to the bargaining table. That's why they...
Well, he could have used a bigger hammer than that, though.
You know, I don't know how much of a hammer he has. He does have the ability to call a 60-day cooling-off period.
Right.
But that's something that's been used before in the Bay Area, and typically what it does is it means that there's 60 days where no bargaining or very little bargaining takes place, and all it does is delay what was going to happen anyway, which in this case is a strike.
What is your sense? I mean, you know, we were talking about possibility of AT Transit on strike as well. And I mentioned before Pete Castelli of SEIU 1021 talked about a tidal wave just beginning. And he said you can bet he said you better get ready, San Francisco. I mean, this suggests a real ongoing struggle between management of transportation and public employees.
I think you may be right. I mean, right now there is sort of this confluence of AC Transit and BART, both having contracts up at the same time. You know, typically it happens when contracts expire, and in this case, you know, they both happen at the same time.
And let's talk about, for BART, the chief issues are, we've talked about them, overtime and pension contributions and health care, but also overtime, which in some cases would allow, say, a call-in sick on a scheduled day and then work an unscheduled day with pay. That's kind of a slippery slope here, isn't it?
I'm not sure exactly what you mean in terms of a slippery slope.
Well, just the whole question of overtime and how it's used and how workers are compensated for that. I mean, it presents some real formidable challenges in this negotiation, I think, doesn't it?
Well, certainly it does. I mean, I don't know about everybody else, but where I work, you have to work 40 hours in order, before. Well, you either have to work more than 8 hours in a day or more than 40 hours in a week in order to get paid overtime. If you call in sick, you don't pay over or get paid on those, those extra hours that you work. It's typical, or it used to be very typical for that to happen in the public sector. It is not so much anymore.
And what's your sense about the likelihood that this will get back to the bargaining table, or the realistic sense that they will sit down and talk soon rather than later?
It's hard to tell at this point. I mean, when a strike begins, there's always sort of this mix of, enthusiasm, bravado, anger. And people aren't really ready to sit down and talk. I would say the earliest would probably be, sometime this afternoon or this evening. I know that, I've spoken privately with people who say that they think that may happen.
I'm looking at some listener comments. Phil writes, this should not really be a contentious us versus them sort of negotiation. This definitely should not be about labor versus management. It should be about fair compensation and the value of the service provided. It should be about sustainable economics of the situation, but not holding the public hostage to a union's difficult and possibly unrealistic demands. And Tom asks, and Michael, you might be able to, I suspect, answer this. He says, I've heard all sorts of numbers thrown around, but what do BART train operators actually make? What's the high, low, and median salary? And with so many people still unemployed or having gone backward in their income, I think the union needs to be more satisfied with where they stand relative to the rest of the public. I think the average salary is about $60,000. Is that what I'm reading, Michael?
It's somewhere in that range. I've looked at a database that sort of lists all the employee salaries by job title. And for both station agents and train operators, it seems that it's around $63,000 is the average.
Couple more tweets. Tom tweets, bitter sentiments are the wrong idea. All government employees deserve fair wage increases. We shouldn't aim for suffering in solidarity. And another listener tweets, I'm a teacher. I pay into my retirement, my benefits. Haven't had a raise in 8 years. Hard to feel bad for BART employees. Let me bring another caller on, and that's you, Jennifer. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm an SEIU 1021 public employee in San Francisco. I live in the East Bay. I took today off so that I wouldn't have to deal with the headache, but I totally am firmly disappointed with all the comments I hear that people say, I haven't had a raise, why should you? Are you kidding? The divide and conquer mentality is really taking hold. People need raises. They need livable wages. The Bay Area is not a cheap place to live. BART is a very lovely commodity. And people who work for the public should be compensated. I also happen to work in a dangerous environment with people who sometimes get arrested from the BART station. We're at risk. We need to be compensated, and we need to be safe. It is not unreasonable to demand and request a safe living wage, benefits, and simple things. I think more employees, public servants and private, should demand the same.
Hi, Jennifer, I thank you for that call, and good to hear from an SEIU union member. Let's get Gary on the record here. Gary, joining us from San Francisco. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm a federal manager. I retired in 2008, and normally I'm pro-union, but one of the problems I have is the 40 unscheduled days off on average. That is really unconscionable. I would not offer overtime to any of my staff members at the Federal National Archives if they had more than six days off, unscheduled days off in a calendar year. We paid in approximately 8% into our federal pension. We also paid about 40% of our health care costs. Last year I was working for the National Archives. I was paying about, for family policy for two, I was paying about $400 a month. That was my share of the health care costs. So I think that BART employees should have a safe working environment. I agree with that. But the getting a 2% raise per year is more like what federal workers have gotten recently. And it's the number of days off and offering overtime after people have unscheduled days off is really unacceptable. That's really just poor management. You don't offer someone days off after they've simply been calling up unscheduled to make – that's game playing. It's essentially that. So that's all I want to say.
All right. I'm glad you said it. And, Gary, I thank you for the call. More listeners will hear from Roberto. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. I had two issues, one of which is I find it incredulous that there's money, not more money in the coffers of the management has bought with all of the upturn in the housing and the prices of business, the cost of goods, and the profits rising. It doesn't make sense to me. But one issue that I've come to me when listening to the program is a real need to have a debate put forth between the two opposing parties that's open to the public, perhaps even two, it may have to be in two segments, so that the public has an opportunity to actually hear both sides. And
we've heard some of that this morning, Roberto.
I beg your pardon?
I say the public heard some of that this morning on air.
That's correct. Well, I'm not going to leave that off, sir. I appreciate your intent in doing that, but I think it needs to be something that's a little bit more programmed. Both representatives are there. A neutral body put in place, say like the League of Women Voters, to moderate. And the questions posed are fair and reasonable. That way both sides can issue their stances. Now you're getting call-ins from opinions that don't always hit to the heart. And the last comment I'd like to make specific is that this issue about overtime issues, pay being reduced, and safety, these are issues that are not happening specific solely to the BART workers. These are happening with unions all over the country. And the same tools are being put in place to combat that in that, well, what about me? I didn't get mine, so therefore you're not going to get yours. So it's kind of interesting that it's not specific solely to the BART employee workers, but in fact to all the unions throughout the country.
Yeah, important point, and I thank you for the call. Let me go back, if I may, to Michael Cabanatuan, who again is transportation writer for the San Francisco Chronicle. We talked about roughly the salary of BART workers. What about the finances where BART is concerned? I mean, how much are they, at this point, have a kind of excess of revenue, as, say, the union is claiming? And on the other hand, they're talking about austerity and having to build their own infrastructure. How do you see it, Michael?
Well, it all depends on how you look at it. You know, over the last few years, you know, say 4 years ago, BART was suffering just like everyone else was. Its primary sources of revenue, sales tax and fares, were both down and down significantly. But they've recovered, and instead of a deficit in their budget, they now have a surplus in their operating budget. But public agencies usually have both a separate operating budget and a separate capital budget. And capital is for improvements that BART needs, especially as it continues to grow. They need to modernize. Well, first of all, they need to buy more rail cars, and they're talking about buying 1,000 instead of the 600 or so they have now. They need to modernize their train control system so that they can run trains closer together and more of them through the Transbay Tube. And they need to build a maintenance facility in Hayward to handle all the new cars. When you consider those needs, which I believe are around $16 billion, BART needs to come up with a share of that. And, you know, they say that we can't spend it all on our employees. We need to save some of it for those costs.
Randy Rensselaer, you want to come in here?
Well, you know, BART's challenge really is to try to maintain the system they have. BART is not a young system anymore. BART needs new cars. But it's not just BART. We see this across the board. The federal government is retrenching. The state government has retrenched as well. These big systems, be it public transit like BART or San Francisco Muni or Caltrain or the bus systems across the entire Bay Area or our local streets and road systems, are in dire need of repair. And many years ago...
And this is plus the maintenance costs.
Well, many years ago, cities put money into their road system as part of their general fund. BART for decades has put its general fund into maintaining the system they have. This is just good business practice. BART is clearly trying to get back to it. But just because a public agency has some money on the table doesn't mean it doesn't also have 50 years of deferred maintenance that it has to deal with as well.
And I wonder, getting back to what happened last night when things went awry and they couldn't come to an agreement, Michael Cabanatuan, there were supposedly 11 items that had tentative agreement. That seems to me to be some fairly significant progress, at least on the face of it.
Well, not being at the bargaining table, it's really hard to tell how significant those items were. I mean, when you bargain a contract, you bargain
every little thing from, you know, military leave to, you know, whether employees will have a break room and things like that. And I really don't know what those 11 items are.
Well, let me read some more listener comments. Matt writes, two words, automated trains. Robots don't need overtime, health care, or pensions. Another listener, Angela, writes, as a daily BART writer, I'm always impressed by the willingness of BART employees to be responsible for the safety and well-being of its riders. As the public, we should be willing to ensure the safety of these employees. If a workplace is unsafe, there is no salary that will compensate for this. It's discouraging to hear the forum commentators as well as the call-ins focused only on salary. Well, when we heard from Josie Mooney, Michael Canabatuan, she mentioned safety as a major issue, and Let's hear their concerns, at least from your perspective.
You know, I do think they're genuine in their concerns. There are people who have said, oh, well, this is just all a ruse. They're trying to redirect the conversation. And, well, of course, they're trying to put a better face on it. I mean, that's, you know, that's what they're doing. But they have raised these issues before. I've heard for the past two or three years, the BART station agents and have come forward complaining about assaults and about dangerous conditions and about the need either for better policing, better staffing, or you know, even ways to sort of better control entry in and out of stations and protection of agents inside the booths. Also, for at least a year, I've been hearing complaints about workers and lighting and the in the tunnels and the process they have for turning on and off the electricity and rails when they're working on them.
Let me read some of your tweets. Anthony tweets, I'm miffed by listeners who aren't seeing raises, who scorn BART employees for attempting to break this cycle. Someone is getting rich. Another listener says there is a price to pay for transportation. It's far less than the price we pay for a CEO's golden parachute or a real estate speculator's scams. Eric tweets, unions, fight for living wages, universal health care and universal pension benefits for all, not just your benefits. A lot of strong sentiments here, as you can well imagine. Let me read a few more. Dave writes, I was curious and looked up how much a BART pays for the same job I perform. The wage paid is 20% less than what my trade typically pays, and the employee contributions are much higher. I had the chance to go to BART about 10 years ago, and I decided to take another job. Looks like I made the right choice. If I were a BART employee, I would have looked for new employment elsewhere a long time ago, and I certainly would be in a mood to strike now. Joan writes, if BART workers with all their leverage can't get back some of the losses from the Great Recession, then none of us can. The pauperization of us workers will continue apace. And another listener writes, working people in the United States have been subsidizing the ever-improving quality of life for the very wealthy, people who reap ever-growing fortunes even during the recession. While their workers slip closer to poverty and the infrastructure that supports all that wealth is crumbling. The roads and highways, trains and tunnels were almost all built at a time when taxes were higher, unions were stronger, and middle-class wages were also higher. Let me bring another of your calls in. Drake joins us from Half Moon Bay. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. Thanks for letting me weigh in. I've got a few tweets worth. So the first one is just a suggestion I'm sure they've already thought of, but to separate the worker rider safety issue from the money and compensation and benefits issue would show a lot of us who have to, you know, rally support their real intentions, professionalism, worth, and ultimately their value. A quick aside, just as a management person, management knows that they can't run BART on their own. They need really good people, and they're willing to pay for really good people. And it's a lot like in a relationship when one member tries to force the other or demand them to say, I love you. If you have to force it, it just isn't the same. If the employee is really, really good, management's going to do everything in their power to treat them right and show them the love. And then lastly, we have to remember
all you need is love, right?
Well, in this case, if they're forcing it, it's sort of like you have the best employee in the world. You're not gonna let them get to the point where they feel like squawking. You're gonna try to shower them with whatever tools at your disposal to make them feel appreciated and rewarded. But the final comment is that, you know, we have to remember that being a citizen needs freedom, and it means today freedom to participate, not freedom from participating. And if one of our citizens chooses to do a good work of public service, they need to recognize it's not a path to financial enrichment. It's meant to be a sacrifice, a service to the public, which is why we admire them for a job well done. We admire them for their sacrifice, not for their greed.
Right, and I'm worried. Thank you for those comments. It prompts me actually to go back to you, if I may, Michael Canabatuan. There are two unions involved in this, and it's BART management on the one side, I suppose, if you want to see it that way, in the terms of polarization, and Local 1020 and Amalgamated Transit Union on the other side. Are these unions, so to speak, really totally on board with each other? I mean, because they have not only different interests, but we're talking about very different kinds of employees. We're talking on the one hand about mechanics and maintenance workers and professional staff, and the other, train operators and station agents.
Well, anytime you have different organizations with different leadership and you know, different types of workers, you know, there are always points where people disagree. But you know, when they took their strike vote about a week ago, they had pretty similar results. They had you know, higher than I guess it was around 99% at both of them, and they both had large turnouts. You know, the unions are a little different. SEIU 1021 represents a number of different employers in the Bay Area, including the city of Oakland, which is also on strike today. And they have many more resources and much more of an organization. ATU 1555 is a smaller group, and they represent roughly 1,000 people at BART, train operators and station agents, and they're not as not as organized, not as slick, not as well funded.
Yeah, we should mention that SEIU has about over 1,400 that they represent. Let me bring another caller on here, and that's Johan from Richmond wants to talk about the larger context. Hi, Johan.
Oh, good morning. Good morning. And yeah, basically, I just wanted to almost pose a rhetorical question as well. I mean, who's more short-sighted? You know, I mean, the unions in pushing for and working at the bargaining table for a decent living wage and safe working conditions, or, you know, management is ignoring the fact that they are very piecemeal furthering, you know, the Koch brothers, Scott Walker-esque revolution of an attack on public employees' unions nationwide. I mean, this is not happening in a microcosm by itself, and it does deserve its individual merits, this case, and analyzing it, whether it's proper and which party is to be held accountable. And just to add, I'm a career owner. I drove West 80 today to my first pickup and doing turning around for northbound 880. So very much directly affected by the extra heavy traffic, but as a lot of these listeners have also noted, I mean, eight-hour workday, state-mandated meal breaks, I mean, all these protections, the ability for a union to bring this case without being told by management what to do, that all came from collective bargaining. That's a dire threat of being eliminated in this country.
I'm glad you reminded us of the macrocosm, because it does certainly radiate out to that, and I thank you for the call. And let me go to another caller here, and that's Sarah from Walnut Creek. Sarah, hi.
Hi. I was just wanting to say something about, you know, I don't hear a whole lot about what I actually read in Contra Costa Times yesterday. The top employees there at BART, they get all that overtime pay, holiday pay and vacation time that they can rack up to these huge amounts. They're saying they have a collective 70 years worth of holiday time racked up, and they can just cash out, you know, all this money at the when they quit or when they retire, or they can even have it staged out so that they can then collect more vacation time.
Now, that is a big issue, as we said before, Sarah, and I thank you. And, of course, there was a lot of brouhaha, as I'm sure you remember, Randy Rentschler and Michael Cavan-Patouin, when there was a payout of, what, over $300,000 from BART?
Well, there was. A lot of this has been reported in the newspapers. I'm sure that these and many items have been at the negotiating table this time as well.
Yeah, there was the former general manager who got that without working a day, we should add. And I'm going to read some other emails here. Leslie writes, from the writer's perspective, even if ridership has been up, I haven't observed any increase in service, such as more frequent trains or extended nighttime service, that would be adding to the burden of these employees. If existing BART salaries and wages seem on par with what the job market has to offer, then I think any surplus in revenue should be invested in updating the embarrassingly outdated and filthy infrastructure of the trains and stations, or reduce fares. Another listener, John, says, I'm one of the last people who would describe the power of organized labor as an evil. I don't think it's just a coincidence that the decline of the American middle class is correlated with the steady decline of American unions over the past 40 years. Nor am I going to claim that the job of a BART operator is that of a glorified button pusher, as you probably hear from other voices. That being said, if you have managed to inspire a fervor of Reagan-esque strike-busting into the hearts and minds of the Bay Area's workforce, you should probably take that as a sign that you have crossed over a certain line, whatever that line might have been drawn in the first place. If by striking you're hoping to appeal to the sympathies of the public, you are failing miserably. Let me get another caller on, and that's Jerry. Good morning. Jerry, are you with us? Yeah, hi.
Yes, I am, as a matter of fact. I wanted to say that I find it interesting that Bart gets all of this notoriety when they're having these kinds of issues going on, and it's not that I think that they don't deserve it. I think that public employees deserve everything that they're getting, but I think that the management of these districts, they play the union employees against the public, and the public doesn't understand what's going on. And a good, for instance, is that while we're in negotiations here, Alameda County Water District, the management is trying to hold us down so that we're not getting any raises. They don't want us to give us any raises. They want us to pay for our medical, and they want us to pay for our retirement and this and that and the other thing. But they don't want to give us any raises. And at the same time, at the exact same time, they're handing out raises to management employees. This is not an exaggeration, mind you. This is not an exaggeration. Of 25, 35, and 50% raises to these management employees. And they're raising the rates to the customers. And
sir, we're going to have to leave it there. We certainly get the point. And this hour has, I hope, been not only instructive in enlightening the public about what is at issue here and what is at stake here, but also these larger issues that we've broached in the course of this hour, which, you know, affect so many public employees and so many of the battles that will probably, unfortunately, be raging between workers and management. Let me thank those who joined us this hour. Dan Brecke from KQED Public Radio News. Randy Rentschler here in studio with us, Director of Legislation and Public Affairs for MTC, the Metropolitan Transportation Commission. We also spoke with Josie Mooney of SEIU 1021 and Alicia Trost of BART, and Michael Canabatuan from the San Francisco Chronicle. And thank you, our listeners. We wouldn't be here without you. We want to also thank our senior editor, Dan Zoll, and our producers, Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi, our engagement producer, Amanda Stupai, our engineer, Danny Bringer, and our executive producer, Raul Ramirez. For all of us at KQED, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.